This is Radio Influence.
Good evening, everyone. It is actually Sunday, June 3rd today, 2018, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with me, Beans, and my co-host,
Frankie Val.
Thanks for coming into the studio on a Sunday to do the show.
I was just going to say the same thing. It's a little odd because we do this on a Friday usually, but it doesn't seem too bad right now. And you know what? If we're going to look at this silver lining wise, it gives people something to listen to on a very usually boring Monday morning commute.
That's true. So, yeah, it's a good hour. You know, when you're sitting in traffic, having to hear the horns beep, you get to listen to us.
Everybody's depressed. It's a good thing.
As long as you're here, because you pep it up.
I have to try to do something. If I don't try to pep it up, then I'll get sucked right down into the abyss. Trust me, I'm more susceptible than you are.
How easy is it, though? It's really easy to get sucked into the abyss, especially.
Think about the Matrix. And the guy, what's his name? That played Ralph Cifaretto on the Sopranos.
The one who eats the steak?
Yeah.
I don't know his name.
Ignorance is bliss.
It's true. You know,
there's a lot of people out there it's all fine and they're wondering what you're so upset about. Well, the less you know, it doesn't make you a stupid person. It's just the less you encounter, the easier it is to just be like, hey, ho-hum about things.
How many times have you wished you were ignorant?
I don't know. It's one of those things where there's been many times where I'm close to wishing I was ignorant, but then ultimately said I'd rather just take the pain than just be one of these, you know, one of these people around me who just, I don't know, just looks like grazing cattle. And I hate to say that. I hate to say that sometimes because it's a very derogatory term, but like I said, it's only to a certain degree. If you were to sit down with any person one-on-one, That is usually a really different scenario or a different type of interaction based upon, as opposed to masses of people. And it's only on certain subjects. I think there's so many, far more people are decent than they are, indecent. So it's really just a matter of what subjects are the most painful.
Let me ask you something. If someone were to come to you and sit down with you and say, look, you could take this pill right here. You would be happy. You would have no idea what was going on, but you would live your life. You would be happy. You would be fulfilled. And you'd be just like a normal person walking around. Or you can stay here and never have a steak again. What would you pick?
Never have a steak?
You know, because he picks the pill, so because he wants one last piece of steak.
The figurative steak.
Yeah, the figurative. You thought I meant it literally?
I thought we were talking about actual meat. I was like, I don't know. I mean, I love a Delmonico cut. It's really good stuff. But I don't, it's one of those things, Tracy.
You're going to have to stop making me laugh.
You don't know. You just don't know. It could be really, really easy. It's what you can say, well, that's a cheap way of living. But how do you even know? If there really is no knowing and all you are is happy, can you really fault somebody for wanting to be happy?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a hard choice.
So I don't know. I say that now, but here's my thing. And it's something I've been grappling with over the weekend. You face this every day. I mean, there's always the threat hanging over our heads. The world is being run in such an arbitrary way, especially when it comes to censorship, self-censorship. I mean, once you get the culture is leading itself towards self-censorship, because if people are able to brand themselves and actually rewire themselves in a way where they hold themselves back from saying certain things, talking about certain subjects, and considering certain outcomes in a, I don't know, in an unanointed way, then you don't have to actually flex your muscle as an authoritarian body and actually show people the back of the set of the Truman Show. Once people say, you know what, this self-censorship thing does not work for me if we're living in a free society, and all of a sudden they encounter the back wall of the Truman Show, then they realize, oh my God, we really never even had a choice. And self-censorship was just a way of getting us to all think that we were being decent with each other. But it was just this really docile existence to keep us away from the fences we didn't even know were there. And I mean, that's coming out in the way that the European governments are censoring people. It comes out in the way that we see censorship as hypocritical standards, that double standards that are being set forth in this country right now. And, you know, people like you and I who put all of our thoughts out onto other people's platforms, we're starting to see that this is a real real situation that we're looking at each other right in the face, that we at any day, for a completely arbitrary reason, we can have all of our work for years on end scrubbed from existence after all those years of work, hard, honest work, building up our own types of brands. Now, the one thing I would say is, whereas that is a really stark way of looking at the world, realistically, I am okay with facing that any day of the week and staring it in the face and taking on the slings and arrows, as long as they allow us to do that and compete. The problem is that it's so demoralizing, number one, to go up against what sometimes feels like we're beating off the tide, that it just keeps coming on in bigger waves and it looks too big for us to actually handle and turn, you know, try to push the Leaning Tower of Pisa back 1 inch the other way. But it's another thing where you start feeling like, I'm not going to be able to be allowed to compete. That is the problem that I think is most disturbing out of all of this, where you feel like there is no space on the chessboard for you even to put a pawn down.
Yeah, and this is a multifaceted topic to approach. Number one, in the beginning when you said, you know, talking about self-censorship and stuff, I think that the more that this happens, it starts out, you know, they started out sort of slowly and people stop using certain words, and then they stop talking about certain ideas. And then after you do it on a daily basis so many times, it sort of becomes a habit and your thinking changes. You don't talk the same way anymore online. You just don't express ideas anymore, just out of your own self, you know, the habit of not being able to, or feel like you're not being able to do so. We've seen this close up and personal in my, you know, on Twitter, at least in the past couple of days, and in many different ways, from the doxing of private citizens to the doxing of the families of people that have become public figures recently, to the hypocritical nature of the feigned outrage over words that were said or typed. And then to the outright threats coming from some just because they stated factual information that's available in the public sphere. Mm-hmm. It's really scary. It really is. And Tommy Robinson, whether you agree with him or not, like you mentioned, in England, you can be walking down the street and there are cameras and recording devices picking up every word you say and putting you on lists. You can't go and sit down and have a bottle of wine and have a conversation freely expressing ideas. Whether they're stupid ideas or smart ideas is inconsequential. They're ideas that need, you know, you don't come to a position unless you're able to freely express these ideas that you have. And you're recorded and put on a list. That's going to come here if we don't put our foots down. Put your foots down.
Everybody put your foots down now.
We don't put...
It's true. Listen, dude, you're talking about the land of the Magna Carta here, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And here we are. And this is why we say, thank you, Europe. Thank you, Europe. But we had certain subpopulations of Europe had a better idea for the new world when we came over here. And of course, what gave us, you know, what we enshrined and we codified in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, a First Amendment that I'm pretty sure that people in the UK wish they had right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, that's the whole thing. We fled that. That's the founding of this country was basically, you know, even though taxation, you know, whatever, we fled that sort of overreach of us in terms of being free people. That's why this country was founded in the first place. That's why we did this. This was supposed to be the grandest experiment ever. And it's supposed to still be working. But we're facing what I feel like, honestly, personally, is sort of like a virtual war right now. And the our opponents do not use rules to play there, you know, to guide their warfare. There are no rules. Their rules do not exist. There is not an even playing field. They don't enforce the rules of war equally.
Right.
And we allow it to happen over and over and over again. But that, how do you fight back? What do we do? We don't.
The first and the only thing to do is to change the narrative and to challenge and to change the premise of the narrative. I think that subconsciously what we always do is we surrender the story. We surrender the story to whoever we talk to. We're always on the defensive in the way that we're first accepting the premise that America, that the West, is built upon the colonialization of other people, of slavery, that we are an oppressive culture in the West, that all of these things. We accept these premises and we debate on those premises, and it's a thing that really needs to be changed, because like you said before, the rules of engagement are different for either side. And the reason why it's that way is because the word liberal, I mean, you just think about the word games we play: liberal, conservative, progressive, oppressive, whatever the hell it is. Those words have now been given new meaning, and that the people that are actually bending the rules of engagement are actually seen as, I mean, hey, listen, I said it before on Friday night show, on my own show, if you were to face, and if you were going to go up against the devil himself, if you're going to try to, if you can be, I don't know, if you're going to bend the rules of engagement to actually take out evil incarnate itself, wouldn't you do it? And that's exactly what these people think
they're doing.
They believe that they're Cobra. They believe that they're Sylvester Stallone from Cobra.
Yeah.
That's what they think. They're going after Satan itself. So wouldn't you spy on somebody? You know, if you, isn't that just a small price to pay if you're just trying to take out evil? I mean, this is the way that they think. So if we don't actually address the foundational problems, just like when we talk about the OIG reports, and we talk about the Clinton investigation, and we talk about all these different things that are tying together with the special counsel, I say, why are we debating the middle chapters of the book when the entire foundation will take the whole building down with it? And what is that foundation in that particular situation? It's whether or not the DNC was hacked, which it wasn't. Why are we talking about porn stars and this and that when this whole thing needs to go away? So it's always about the narrative. It's always about the basis of which we surrender the premise. And we have to stop surrendering the premise of these arguments now.
I agree with you. And I think that there, I mean, it's such a deep topic, Frank, right? I mean, there's so many different directions to go in. If, from my perspective, I'm looking at, do you know Candace Owens?
Yes.
So she was a Democrat. She was, I mean, she's got a very interesting story. She had a website that was very, I think, very kind of, it was just not a good idea, in my opinion. It was basically that she was going to form a social, like a repository of
social autopsy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know about this.
Yeah, and it was a bad idea. I think that her problems. What?
Caused her a lot of problems, yeah.
It did. And just, I've watched her very carefully because I feel, I look to her and I see how articulate she is and how smart she is and how masterfully she's really conveying the message, right? She does a really good job of articulating in a very intelligent manner what the message is. She's a social sort of, like whereas I do investigative work and journalism, she's more of a social culture figure. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that her work, I think, runs a little bit more parallel to what I do.
Yes, yes.
It's, everybody has their own delivery system, that's all.
Yeah, and so she's been on, I mean, she's gone mainstream, she's on Fox. Actually, she was working with InfoWars, not working with, but she started out kind of breaking through on InfoWars. I've been following her a really long time, and she's growing, and you can tell. She's not growing in terms of numbers, growing in terms of herself. You can see her taking strides, and it's great to watch. So people have started to, on the left, they've gone after her now. It's in full attack mode. They're coming after her, especially after Kanye West decided to tweet her and say he likes the way she thinks. And, you know, then there's people that are just jealous that she's getting all the attention. She's all over Fox, Hannity, Judge Jeanine, you know, all over mainstream media as the counter voice to what the supposed mainstream narrative is supposed to be. We're all evil, horrible people because we don't believe like you. So this journalist starts doing a story on her, and she starts, Candace has been very open about her family background. Her father had problems with alcohol. Her mother, was in a group home growing up. She had a very, very tenuous childhood. It wasn't, you know, middle class, upper class, rich girl who then turns into conservative after being Democrat. No, this one, you know, her cousins were on welfare. She's seen it all basically in her life. And she doesn't talk about it very, you know, in depth, but there was some kind of a misspeak by Charlie Kirk at one of her appearances. And he said that her mother was an alcoholic. And he misspoke. He didn't mean it. But she didn't feel it was so important that she needed to stop the talk to correct him and say, no, it was my dad. I mean, you know, the flow of conversation, you don't want to do that. So this journalist seizes upon it and starts digging into her family, calls a friend of her mom's from high school, starts asking all kinds of questions, says, if you don't get back to me by X date, I'm just going to print this, whether it's true or not. Basically as a threat, if you don't get back to me, I'm printing this and I don't care if it's lies and I'll take your non-response as an agreement. Do you understand what I mean?
What was about the print?
They were going to just print that the mom was an alcoholic, she had problems, you know, just negative things about the family.
Because of the misstep during an interview?
Yeah. It just clued this reporter onto whatever was happening, you know, in more in depth in her family. And she was basically seizing on it as, well, Candace didn't say that her mom was an alcoholic.
And what would that matter once again?
This is the thing.
So are you saying that putting more of a tumultuous background on Candace Owens as a cultural figure right now, as a rising cultural figure right now, is going to discredit some of the things she's addressing?
That's, I guess, what they want to do, and what she argues they're wanting to do. And it got worse than that. I mean, this journalist was horrible. It's scary. These are private people that are not used to the spotlight. Just because their daughter, sister, whatever, is now a public figure doesn't mean that their lives are open to scrutiny by the mainstream media, going back to high school, where some of these people don't even know the things that have gone on in the family. And Candace says, come to me and ask me. You know, you didn't even ask me what happened. I would have told you exactly what happened. She's writing a book about it right now. So long story short, why I brought her up is not only to, you know, kind of exemplify how disgusting this is and how this is happening more and more and more. And we have other examples of it we can speak to. It's happened to me personally, not on the scale as big as this, but it is disgusting. And it's just part of the game now, apparently. But she and I sort of did the same thing, but she had a masterful response to this. Instead of getting, you know, kind of scared by her past and what they thought, I guess, she would do is to try to deny it, cover it up, because they're used to conservatives just kind of shirking away and not taking response. You know what I mean? Being afraid.
Yeah.
She decided she was going to come out and drop everything that she could, but like the Don Jr. defense with the emails, come out before they had a chance to print their article and basically just drop everything that she had ever done, talked about, family dirt. I mean, every last thing that she had about herself. Just come clean.
That's the same exact way that Eminem won the rap battle at the end of 8 Mile.
Exactly. And they were comparing that too. So what she did is she did a Periscope, and then she said, I actually believe that the reason why they're doing this is because they have this sort of, like, she says, journalist hitmen are no different than school shooters. They do it so that you'll mention their names. They literally live for it. Never give them publicity. A journalist lives for the idea that if they print something salacious and hurtful enough, a public figure and or celebrity will mention their name in anger and hurt. We should stop using their names for that reason. And I agree. It's why I've chosen constantly, when attacked warrantlessly by people and viciously by people who have nothing to go on, I will not respond to it and bring them up into it's just it's what they're craving. This is why they're doing it. And I love what she did. She did a Periscope for like an hour and she dropped all of it. She just said everything. It's all out there now. What are they going to do now?
I don't know.
She took their power away.
Exactly. I mean, that's my, why do you think I tell some of the personal stories I do on my show? I lay myself bare. This is the whole problem here is that we are a culture, especially in social media age, where everybody is searching for that dopamine rush. Everybody wants the likes and the shares. And of course, well before social media, the whole purpose of many journalists, there's people out there who have integrity. There's people out there who actually want to bring light and they want to highlight really interesting developments within our history that are always evolving history before our faces. And they want to be able to be a part of the chronicling of that history. But many people are just out there to collect scalps. That's it. People are just collecting. They want to be the one to have been able to collect the biggest scalp. That's it. If it bleeds, it leads. So, I mean, that happens collectively, and it happens just on now that we are in the information age and everybody can start a blog. And if you're savvy enough, you know how to build a following online and get it in front of people and trigger certain algorithms. The individual can now just be out there, hacking away at whoever, just for what? For what? I don't know.
It's crazy. That's the motivation. What's the motivation behind it? Is it just the lust for a scalp? Is it because she's so effective at converting teaching the black population because she can speak to them in a way that she speaks to them, but she's been there. She's been through it. She understands, And this is a horrible thing, but we need to just call a spade, she's black, so it comes off better from her than it would from me. You know, she can relate to these to people, I guess, since we're identity politic, world now. It's easier for somebody to relate to her than it would be to me or to you. Do you agree? I mean,
I agree, but the other thing you have to take notice of is that when people are out there trying to collect the proverbial scalps of their enemies, you want to also pay attention to what exactly the conclusion of the article was. Is it that Candace Owens has had a few people in her immediate family or her inner circles of friends who have had problems in their life, like everybody else?
Yeah.
Is the story, and if that is the crux of the story, that Candace Owens has a couple people in their lives that are a little bit emotionally disturbed, or maybe they have some substance abuse problems, like everybody's family has, if not the journalists themselves, that doesn't have some kind of weird addiction or some kind of a fetish. It's the weirdest thing in the world to observe. But outside of pointing this out, that everybody has flawed families, dysfunction in their lives, interpersonal relationships that are a little bit more complex than we wish they were, what was the crux of your argument? Does this take away from the fact that the welfare state is it's a auto-cannibalizing culture killer? Does it take away from anything that she is speaking to on a daily basis? Or are you just trying to dig up dirt with no conclusion?
See, and this is the thing, Frank. We see this in our community too. Candace is on a bigger level than like you and I and on some of the people that we talk to, at least for now. I hope that changes. But there are people out there, and a large majority of them, sadly, that will read that article and they will close the book on her and they will never entertain what she has to say again, just because that's just the way people are. Then there are people like you that ask the question, like, what the hell is the point of this? Like, really, what's the point of this? It's just a sad thing that there are people that are swayed still so easily by things like this. That, and it always is a humbling moment for me to realize that we have so far to go. We still have so far to go to get people thinking for themselves. We really do.
Hey, Samantha B.
Yeah.
Samantha B, for example, you have, now I was not a fan of the Trump children being near the president. I just for optics reasons, I just hoped that they would have all stayed back in New York or Florida, manage the business, be loving children, come around for all the big balls and dinners. You don't expect them to stay away and not smell the roses a little bit. But I'm not a big fan of theirs in many ways, just because I don't like what kind of optical problems they can cause, especially Ivanka on a policy setting. I'm not one who would ever say that I think it's a good idea that the federal government should get involved in subsidizing child care and any of that stuff. Those are very big government progressive ideas.
She's not a Republican.
Exactly. Things that you think that they would embrace her over, that there's one of their own inside of the White House.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But what do? They go after her and they call her names. Names that we're supposed to all shy away from because they're the most anti-feminist thing to say. And they go and call her names. Why? Because she's merely a member of the Trump family. Yes. It's a lumping in thing. It's guilt by association. It's us versus the evil people. And you don't ever actually get the crux of their argument because there is no argument. They have no ideas. All they have is taking details of people's lives, whether it be their race, their sexuality, their gender. Now we're getting to that point, and turning people into voting blocks. And where's the ideas? Nothing.
There are no ideas. They have zero ideas. You're absolutely right. It's funny that I was listening to Dan Bongino's show, and he was talking about how the policies the way they've run their party for so long will begin to eat itself. And he brought up Portland, Oregon as an example, where in Portland, Oregon, they had food trucks. And it was like, you know, one of those places you get any kind of food from any kind of truck there was. And I guess what happened is, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but they started actually targeting businesses being run by people that didn't cook the food from their heritage as cultural appropriation. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
So in other words, like if a Puerto Rican person was cooking meatballs and spaghetti, then they would, that's a bad example, but basically...
It's a bad example. They would be left alone.
Yeah. Yes. You know, burritos was the problem. It was burritos, and there was a white man making burritos, and apparently that was bad. So they targeted his business, and they basically shut his business down because he was making burritos in his business, and he was white. And then Dan was saying basically, well, what happens when he's gay and white? What are they going to do then? Or what happens when, you know, he's is Islamic and gay and... You know what I mean? Like, what happens when he identifies as trans and he's cooking? How are they going to get around that? It's going to eat itself, basically, at the end of the day.
Exactly. Exactly. Because once the Democrat Party got away from the last vestiges of constitutionalism and started really concentrating on full out 1960s radical Marxism.
Yeah.
Which is all about class, and it's all about dividing people up. You know that is a currency that's not going to go very far. The devaluation of that type of political currency is so rapid that you have to start making subdivisions
within the subdivisions.
Exactly.
It's almost done now. They're almost done with it.
There's nowhere else you can go.
No.
There's nowhere else you can go. Once you start getting down to the minutiae of gender identity.
How many T's, how many letters are they throwing on the end of it now? I mean,
There's nothing. There's nothing you can do to make this make sense. And to a point, you have to start making subdivisions of everybody, and those subdivisions will eventually start becoming contradictions. And then you're going to alienate people, and hopefully a good amount of people will see what the purpose of all this nonsense was from the beginning. The problem is, will we be too far down the rabbit hole at that point for people to ask the question, what was it that they did not want us to consider from the get-go? And that is the big thing. What was all of this?
Why are you trying so hard to stop ideas?
Yes. And what was it? And liberty is the thing that they want to do away with. There is no, absolutely no reason, and there is no motivation for the modern day left in this country to compromise on anything, because progressivism is incompatible with constitutionalism. They do not want, they do not care about compromise. They don't care about freedom. They don't want people to have a choice.
No, they want power at the end of the day. That's it. Just power. And they're willing to do anything that they can to gaslight people into believing that it's the opposite. You know, it's crazy. Excuse me. It's crazy the way they flip the script on people. Like, they have a good majority of the country believing that we're evil, literally, legitimately evil. Like you've been talking about. Let's talk about Mech for a second. I think it's Amy Mech, right? It's a tough one with her, because she says things that I don't agree with, you know, in large part from what I've been able to read. She's very sort of anti-Islam, which It's a rough subject. We're not even going to get into it. It's the principle of this whole thing that matters, not necessarily whether you agree with her or not. She's on Twitter. She's using Twitter. This is how she tweets. President Trump has retweeted her a couple times or something. She has a big following. Twitter has not suspended this woman. You know how easily people are suspended on Twitter, right?
Uh-huh.
I've seen it over the past week. You know, you don't even have to say anything, but look what this person said in 2007 in a quote, an article, and you're off Twitter all of a sudden. But she gets picked up by this Huffington Post journalist who just wants his mission is clearly to destroy this woman. Clearly. He writes this piece where he calls her husband's employer so many times that her husband gets fired. He mentions it in there. You know, it's just basically a hate-filled rant with every piece of personal information you could possibly ever want to have in an article. And then underneath the article on his page, everybody that's group-thinked in with this gentleman about how this is a hateful, horrible person who doesn't deserve a voice, who doesn't deserve to exist, who needs to go, who can't be allowed a platform, now knows how to find her. How is that okay? How is it okay for the mainstream media to start targeting people as individuals in this country, private citizens who happen to have a following? When do you cross the line into harassment, into something dangerous? You know, people don't accept the responsibility they have, or they do and do it anyway on purpose. What do you think is what's the driving factor here?
I don't know. You think? I think that what it comes down to is whether or not, think about the NFL. Are you taking it upon yourself to put the problem is publicity. I always say this. I've been saying this for a while now. We were not designed for this kind of exposure. Our species was not designed for this kind of exposure. And if you're putting your thoughts out there, and you know, well, let's say it, now, are we talking about any blatantly racist ideas for the husband?
The husband has nothing to do with it. The husband's never said a word.
But he lost his job.
Yeah, that's the guess.
Because of her.
Because of her. He went after the husband. This guy went after the husband as well and other family. And the husband lost his job.
Okay. Now, this is what happens when you live in a fascist nation, actually. This is what mob rule is all about. This is about being on the wrong side of the argument based on, and in completely arbitrary means, the wrong side of the argument, and you have to then live under fear of repercussion or retaliation for political opinions that may not even be your own, but it's guilt by association.
Exactly. And the scariest part of this is for me is that some people are using the fact that she said some hateful things as a reason to be like, oh, well, she should have known. No. You can't do that. You can't do that. Let the market decide whether those ideas are popular or not. Silencing them by threat of violence, basically, is basically what happened, is not going to advance anything. Like, people won't be able to make their own minds up at that. Do you understand what I mean, Frank? Like,
absolutely. And listen, freedom of, if you don't have freedom of speech, you don't have a free society. It's that simple. It's that simple, because you don't know. The only reason why we've gotten as far as we have as a species, in some parts of the world at least, is because we have been able to a degree, been able to hear out and vet out ideas that may be good, bad, in between, and see how they all shake out. Things that used to be considered heresy ended up becoming social norms and scientifically provable facts. I mean, this is just the way that society progresses. And people don't understand that they have been set down a regressive path because of it.
But isn't there like a natural progression of things that will allow that to be impossible? You know, because there's no violence yet, right? They're technically, there's no violence in this. You know, they're not violently overthrowing or violently stopping us from saying what we want to say, but they just happen to own the platforms with which we use to say it. When does nature, like natural law, kind of kick in and flip this thing back? Because there's got to be a point in time where I really feel like, too, that they oversample the part of the populace that believes that this stuff is okay to make it look like we're in the minority. I've spoken about this millions of times. They take the 2%, they magnify them to look like 50, and then the rest of you are left looking around at each other saying, oh my God, I'm weird. I'm the only one who thinks this is weird. I think that we're starting to get past that part of it where people are looking around and finally being so outraged, they're speaking up and saying enough is enough and realizing they're not the minority. But when does it turn and how?
It turns in places like the UK. Now, I'll say this. I'm going to start with Samantha Bee again with her apology. People, I said on Twitter, I'm really just sick of all the apologies. They're nonsense. You know, all the apologies that you hear when people say things that start hurting them in some kind of a way, all the apologies, they usually just pop up in this really predictable loop of censorship and self-censorship. And it's just one of those things where if you believe that you're trying to make a point and you could have made it clearer, then try to clarify your argument and put it on out there. Aside from that, stop putting yourself back in the closets. Just be proud of who you are and put it on out there. And you know what? If your idea is dumb, it's going to be outed as dumb because dumb things usually fall apart under basic scrutiny, which is usually what happens when a leftist opens up their mouths. But the thing about this is when you look at places like the UK that doesn't have a First Amendment, that doesn't have anything that has to do with natural law of our individual rights as individual people, sovereign people, no matter our color, our creeds that we follow, our sexual orientation, because those rights are not codified and enforced, you have a situation where it's going to be up to, it might be in Europe that you see people having to do it the old-fashioned way again. I am never going to say that it's impossible that things get violent. Never going to say it because it's not impossible. Over here, we have a little bit more of a fighting chance because no matter what happens, we are always going to be able to voice our opinions in a way that will at least give other people the permission to think outside the box and test out whether or not the logic we are being fed as universal truth actually really holds up to basic scrutiny. So it's all about the culture you have. Now, one person said, well, listen, I don't agree with you that apologies are useless because that's what makes us a civil society. Well, you would have a really hard time telling me that our society is very civil. It's being held together by the things that people actually outright reject now. Our Constitution and Bill of Rights, if it came up for ratification again today, would not be ratified.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't.
It would not be ratified.
Or there would be clauses underneath about hate speech and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. No, hey, listen, FDR spoke very openly about him wanting a second Bill of Rights. Truman wanted to keep that in mind. You know, much of what the Great Society was LBJ's kind of his own way of bringing many parts of FDR's Second Bill of Rights into fruition, where everybody has a right to a house and it has a right to income and this and that. And we see what that's happening. And now we have people like Candace Owens who is standing up for what all those bad ideas about, you know, Second Bills of Rights and what society should provide for people and what is archaic as far as individual freedom of speech and being able to go out there and plot your own course. How they say that's old and archaic. Well, now you have people like Candace Owens and you have people like Kanye West. And that's where we're at right now. So as far as where this is going and whether or not we're going to have any other options of fighting this, I think in certain parts of the world, you can't rule out that people are going to have to reinstall something, reinstall their own form of government in the old fashioned way. But for us, thankfully, we still have our Bill of Rights. That's it.
Yeah, we do, but it's selectively enforced with free speech zones and, you know, you can't go on a it's and, you know, the other thing is that people use like, oh, private company, private location, private business, private this. They don't understand it and they use those things without understanding it. Like when you go to it's okay for Twitter to censor conservatives, but the bakers have to bake the cake and they don't equate the two together. You know what I mean? They don't use the same principle to explain either one of those. Twitter's a private company, but the baker's a private baker. Why does the baker have to bake the cake for someone who they don't want to bake a cake for? But Twitter's allowed to censor whoever they want because they're a private company. And there's no discussion. There's no discussion. It's hate and vitriol, and it's nasty. It's nasty, and it's scary. It really is. Like, I'm sorry I'm sounding so negative today, but I've been seeing some craziness going on.
You have every right to. But once again, the reason why precedent has been set in such a bad way to allow double standards to become the standard is because of the corruption of our courts. I mean, that's, I'll continue to say it, 90% of the reason why I voted for Donald Trump was because I knew that we would be able, not only would Hillary Clinton been able to have Phil Scalia's seat, but Ginsburg would have retired by Christmas. She would have had that. Anthony Kennedy's probably going to be retiring. Hillary Clinton probably would have had more Supreme Court picks than Donald Trump will have had when his term is over. Because yeah, Anthony Kennedy is he's supposedly a conservative and he wants to step down soon. But you know that Ginsburg is going to hold on until her dying breath now to try to make it so that a conservative or somebody who is not of her party and of her crazy ideological view of the world is not going to fill her seat. Hillary Clinton would have had at least 3 seats to fill. And then you want to talk about double standards becoming the standard? That would have been it.
Holy moly. And in addition to that, you're seeing, too, the freak out about even district judges that they're freaking out on the left. And when I hate making this disclaimer, we have a wide variety of people that listen to us, Frank. Both of us do. It's not all Republicans, conservatives, libertarians. It's progressives and other people, too, that just don't like this corruption we're in. When I say on the left, I mean establishment left. I mean the power structure. I never mean, for the most part, unless I address it directly, regular people who have a classical liberal political view.
Or even a 1990s Democrat point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. But you're seeing the left freak out about these judges being replaced. Meanwhile, they had activist judges on the bench, and they were holding this process up purposefully because they know if they lose the courts and the courts go back conservative, where Roberts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even his view on some of these things, it's logical. It's well thought out. It's not always straight conservative without any. He uses judgment. He's a great justice. So it's a turning point, I think, in that the fact that Trump is in there and he's doing the right thing with the courts is a huge deal. And again, the reason why you voted for him in the first place, losing the Supreme Court for them is devastating. For us, it's just going back to normal. We're not going to go extremist. There's not going to be a repeal of Roe v. Wade. You know, they're not going to repeal the gay marriage. That's not going to happen. Do you agree with me on that? Like,
I don't know. I can't say that I know, because first of all, there's nothing to repeal. It's not law. It's just an opinion that's been passed.
Yes.
So you know, if as far as gay marriage goes, I would love to see our state legislatures or our Congress get together and amend the Constitution and prohibit government from being involved in the marriage at all.
Yeah.
I'd love to see adult consenting individuals in this country be married before their congregations and witnesses from their lives and within the presence of their own legal representation if they want to join any kind of property or create rights of privilege for in healthcare and all that other stuff. I think that's what we should be doing.
Private contract.
Absolutely. Outside of that, as far as Roe v. Wade goes, once again, there is nothing in the enumerated powers that outlines the federal government making any kind of decisions on healthcare, let alone ending the life of the unborn. There's nothing there. So it should be a state's issue. So I wouldn't mind seeing that overturned. I don't care what people say. I'd like to see the states just take part of that.
I think that would be a big jump back to constitutionality in terms of states' rights and what their jobs are, you know, under the Constitution. This is the more libertarian way to look at government and the shrinking of the federal machine, which I agree with wholeheartedly. It's the problem that Rand Paul came up against when he talked about the Civil Rights Act of 1964. You know, people said he was a racist, but they didn't understand that inherently within his argument was the fact that this stuff is not supposed to happen, in the federal. It's just not supposed to happen there. It's not the way the Constitution was written. It's not the way the federal government's supposed to run. So people need to understand the philosophy behind what you're saying rather than just it looks like you're saying it's a, you know what I mean? I'm just
Barry Goldwater had a lot of problems because of his stances on the Civil Rights Act. Now, apparently eventually a lot of people will come around to saying, okay, well, I agree with it. I agree that segregation is a blight on society, that I agree with this and that. But as far as the private property implications of all this, as far as how this actually makes us better as a country, as a people, I don't know. For like, look at affirmative action. That I, as a constitutionalist, even I say, hey, you know what? That seems like it can be an acceptable pair of training wheels to get us into a new age in this country, where after maybe about a generation, it completely goes away and that we're all playing on the same level field again, which is what equality is. But when you talk about civil rights and you talk about all this stuff, you are very afraid of saying anything too rash because you don't want to be seen as a racist.
Well, you're self-censoring, and that's the thing. You can't discuss these ideas. It's circling back to right at the beginning of the show. You self-censor. Like when I don't share on my Twitter account, I don't share my personal views. I really don't share my politics to a large degree because I don't feel like what my function is right now is for my, you're not looking for my opinion on certain things. And I'm trying to stick to factual journalism, open source work. On this show, Frank, we talk a little bit more about ourselves and like what we do and how we think. When you start talking like about hate crimes as a specific topic, and I say I'm against them, whether it's harsher punishments for people who murder police officers, which really gets people angry when I say that, or if it's harsher punishment for, you know, somebody who kills somebody, God forbid, or murders a gay person. Why is that gay person's life or that police officer's life worth more than somebody who doesn't fit into some protected class's life? Who gets murdered? Like, what is 50 more years? Does that value someone else more? And that's how we slide down the slippery slope of what we just talked about in self-censorship and identity politics and collectivism.
Well, the other question I always ask myself is, how does this particular notion, whatever is being proposed, actually make society stronger? How does this make an individual, whether or not they are an individual that identifies as being gay or an individual who is black, how does this make an individual more emotionally equipped to live in a free society? Because in a free society, you live around people who live differently than you. This does not protect people from committing acts of violence or a theft or any kind of assault on a sovereign human being living in that free society. Okay, it does not condone any kind of abuse that a woman takes from a spouse or a man from a spouse. It does not protect people from being able to commit violence or any kind of a crime against someone else. But when it comes down to ideas, when it comes down to speech, when it comes down to any kind of way that you see the world, whether they be forward thinking or regressive thinking, it does not constitute as something that needs to be stifled and put away, and you don't have to protect people from those things and instill all this victimhood onto a person because somebody else has an opinion. They're actually, in passing these laws, it keeps teaching people over the course of generations that when people have different opinions about the way you live your life, you are actually a victim of a crime.
Yep.
And when you instill that in a person,
constant victimhood,
you do not make the society stronger and you do not make the society freer. So whereas you're sitting there and you're saying, I do not agree with segregation, I do not agree with, you know, going after somebody because of who they love, I do not agree with violence in any case, you still are walking the fine line of being a racist or some kind of phobic because you also do not want to see some kind of protected class created or some kind of a regulation put on a free market or a free society just because you want to be able to garner political points. And that's exactly what it is. And that's when the vote getting is created.
It all comes down to the craving of more power over the individual. That's all it comes down to. It boils down to that every single time. It led me to believe, like, to think about when you were saying, you know how in Virginia, the governor there rescinded the laws about convicted felons being able to vote and hold office and stuff so that they would be able to have more of that protected class, apparently, vote for Hillary Clinton in the election. You remember right before?
Yeah.
Did you hear the story? I have to find it while we're talking, of the guy that's running for office who's a pedophile, like an openly his child was taken from him, lives in another place. The only reason why he's able to run for office there is because of this change of the law about parole and all that nonsense with convicted felons. Virginia.
Interesting.
Virginia. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to pull up the article for you. Okay, so I found the article. I found it on The Hill, but lots of outlets picked it up. It's admitted pedophile rapist running for Virginia congressional seat. Nathan Larson, a self-declared racist and ex-con who advocates for pedophilia and rape, is running for Congress in Virginia's 10th district. He says a lot of people are tired of political correctness and being constrained by it. People prefer when there's an outsider who doesn't have anything to lose and is willing to say what's on a lot of people's minds. He confirmed in an interview that he created the now defunct website, I'm not going to name them, which are online forums for pedophiles and violence-minded misogynists. He says he identifies as a pedophile, and they go on and on about him. He has a campaign manifesto he wrote. He's a libertarian. And it says after he spent 14 months in federal prison for the threat, and he made a threat against President Bush or Obama. He said he was going to kill one of them. That was the threat he made. He went to jail for 14 months for that threat. And then after Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe restored voting and other civil rights to thousands of felons who had completed their sentences, Larson became eligible to campaign again. Supposedly, the Libertarian Party, which we could talk about another time, expelled Larson last year.
Very interesting. Well, New York is doing stuff like that, too, with felons. And, of course, you have Chelsea Manning.
Oh, gosh.
Chelsea,
now,
with the near suicide. I mean, you want to talk about who is being elevated to and empowered these days. I'm like, oh, my God. Nutty. Really nutty stuff.
I don't even know what to say about that. Like, what kind of pressure is this person under? They're basically like, was that just a plea for attention? Like, what was that? What was that all about? You know, if it's a real legitimate thing that she was thinking of doing, or he was thinking of doing, whatever your pronoun may be for the day. Should they really be running for Congress at that point? Are they stable enough to run a district? I don't think so.
Well, you're talking about a purely, you want to talk about political pardons. This was a purely political pardon. There's no reason why Chelsea Manning should have been had their sentence commuted for after leaking over 250,000, you know, pieces of you know, classified information, whatever it was. I know it was in the hundreds of thousands, and it was all because of us being feel like, you know, being scorned by a lover or something like that. Either way, this was a purely political commutation because they changed. He changed his name to Chelsea. Wanted to transition to be a woman. And there you go. Barack Obama was able to to commute the sentence of a trans person. That's exactly what it came down to. Nobody that would have been completely politically infeasible for any president from any party to be able to let Chelsea Manning go if it wasn't for the trans the transgender aspect of that.
You know what's crazy about it too? The people, speaking of pardons, people started comparing the pardons that Trump has made, like Dinesh D'Souza and the boxer how do you say that?
Posthumously. Posthumously.
Yeah, so he made that. And you know, now he's talking about Kim Kardashian was there talking about the woman who was on a life sentence for the first time drug offense. But they're critiquing President Trump's pardons. When meanwhile, if you take a look at the pardons that Barack Obama has made, do you know what kind of pardons he's made?
Oh, yes. We're talking about everybody from meth dealers to frauds to, obviously terrorists. And if you go into the minutiae, I know that Kyle, H and I, John Miller, did a really great thread on all the different types of pardons that were done over the course of the Obama administration. But, I mean, It's really unbelievable when you see, when you, you actually compare the two. Now, obviously, there's political, motivation behind everything, including Dinesh D'Souza.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He was also, he also had the book thrown at him for something that we just realized, that Rosie O'Donnell was doing even worse than he did.
And there's nothing going on with her. And then, so the, where do these people get off on their moral high ground, these blue check marks running around? Where do they get off? Like, they just ignore the facts. They just, it's so frustrating, Frank. It really is. It's so frustrating. I think that their blatant sort of elitist oozing, I think that's a good word for it, oozing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's becoming their downfall.
We just have to stay on this. We're right over the target. You know, there's great people, and you do a lot of very, very fine, fine detail investigative work. You, a lot of the guys and gals on Twitter, but the culture, this is the big thing here, because there's nothing standing underneath this veneer. It's a very thin veneer, and it's very thin sheet of ice, and we just need to keep chopping it up because there's nothing underneath. And I think that if there's anything that's going to reverse any of the negative dark cloud moments that we've been having lately, of realizing just how overbearing this fight is becoming, you have to understand that, I mean, it's like that old Gandhi, all the old Gandhi quote about how close you are to winning. When at first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, yep. Then they fight you.
Then they fight you.
We're in the middle of the fight right now. And it really, they're running out of options. Every stance they take, they completely contradict themselves elsewhere. They make them look terrible because all they have is emotion, and emotion is not working anymore. They're getting angrier and angrier. So they're saying things that are stupid in public a lot more. Sally Field tried redefined the word cunt. She in public, Sally Field, meek little Sally Field. She went in public and tried to redefine a word that most people don't even want to hear uttered, just because she wants to make some kind of a back-ass feminist statement. And, I mean, and attack a Trump, not even the Trump. It's unbelievable.
But why did the attack happen too? On top of it, why? Because she posted a picture of herself with her son.
Because she's a Trump.
And well, yeah. And she posted a picture of herself with her son. And there was that whole story going around about the whole kids missing from their parents thing that actually happened back in 2014, which was their big mistake. So the whole thing was based on a farce. And if you look back at the Samantha Bee, the writing team, everybody was all excited about this joke. This was done on purpose. It's not even a joke. It's disgusting. That word, especially coming from a woman about another woman, I don't care what you say, it is a horrible word. Horrible.
Well, you must cringe every time I use it then, because I drop it from time to time.
No, it doesn't bother me when you use it. It really doesn't. Let me tell you why. There's a difference, okay? I'll explain what it is. When it's used like maliciously in like a nasty sort of biting, that's a bad word. But if it's depending on how it's used, like I can't say it. But when I hear another woman call another woman that, it's just you look so trashy. Like she looks worse than she was trying to make Ivanka look. And you say it and you're just like a, no offense, but like a dirty guy. So
I am. Yeah. I'm a filthy person. And that's why I do the show so comfortably. And we're like, this is unbelievable. Yeah, I get so many people, watch your mouth.
I'm like, nope. Look, I'm going to tell you, like when I first started listening to your show, you had the commercial running with the N-word.
Oh, I still love playing that.
I know you do. I was like, oh my God, how could he do this?
The talk shit hotline.
Yeah.
Oh, but you see, because that is fun. I mean, you could tell that was written by Black people.
Yes.
Written by people who want to take this word and they actually made it accessible where everybody could laugh about it, where you have dogs and white people and crazy people and I mean and Jewish people, and they're putting this word on everybody.
You desensitized me to how, like, not desensitized me, but you made me realize how ridiculous it is that I was offended by that in the first place. That's where I was going with it. And I wasn't really offended by it. I was just shocked by it. And the more you listen to your show, the more you start to realize that all that's just bull. Like, leave it at the door. Let's just have an honest discussion and get to the bottom of this crap and take it back, because ultimately that's where freedom's going to lie, is like you say, in the culture. And the news is great, but the culture is important.
Hey, as George Carlin said, it's all bullshit and it's bad for you. that's where it's at. And I think it's very, very interesting. And especially on that whole point right there, I think it's interesting with the Samantha Bee writing, where it was, tell when she's addressing Ivanka, tell your father it's an Obama thing and he'll get right on top of it. It was an Obama thing. It was.
I know.
It's like you're talking about gaslighting. It almost makes people feel, unless it's just the ignorance of the writing, which is probably, that is a factor as well. But if you're a TBS viewer and you like Samantha Bee's horrible show, you're sitting there and you start thinking to yourself, oh, okay, well, on top of it, it wasn't even Obama's fault. But it was.
Samantha Bee, go back to praising Eric Schneiderman, please. Okay. Yeah. Go back to praising Eric Schneiderman. Hey, listen, we're in an hour now. We're going to wrap up the show. It was a great episode. Awesome chatting about this stuff, because I never get to do it. So thanks for entertaining me for this hour, Frank.
Oh, thank you for having me on always.
It's great. I love it. Hey, guys, the Dark to Light podcast with Frank and Beans can be heard on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com. We'll catch you next weekend. Have a good one.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.